Today is Monday, May 27th, 2019, LA Podcast. I'm Hayes Davenport. Scott Frazier is here. Alyssa Walker is here. We're all together again. A little drizzly outside.
I know. It was such a nice day, and then it was such a drizzle day.
But it's less than I was hoping for, because this, I think, is the last.
Last rainstorm of the year, you're going to call it.
Yeah, I think okay. so. I
you
think
keep
so.
Saying that. And
I know, I have
again.
Been saying that a lot, and so that's why I keep saying it.
I heard there's actually like El Nino supposed to happen all summer.
It's going to rain all summer?
That's what I heard.
Oh, good. That's insane, though.
Yeah.
Because
El Nino is a winter thing, though.
Yeah, that's why it's late.
But oh, it's coming
really
that
late.
Yeah. It's coming in the summer.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you should stop telling people it's the last rain of the year.
I missed last week, and so I didn't get to talk about SB 50 getting scuttled, and people listening are like, good, let's move on. Do not talk about this. But I want to anyway.
Well, there's still more fallout, too. So even more has been said this week. I think that was interesting. So
there was a lot.
There's more to say.
Being said, and things will continue to be said. That's my other prediction. but I want to read, instead of my LA story, I just want to read these letters that the LA Times published about SB 50. I'm sure you guys read this. It begins, the LA Times editorializes, either SB 50 was the most unpopular piece of state legislation in years, or many LA Times letter writers live in tidy neighborhoods of historic single family homes.
I wonder which.
Could be both.
That's almost like a set your sources foray.
I would say that is the most obvious, like, they should actually know, right?
They are to look inward, possibly.
Look outward. You're delivering the papers to these people. You know where they live.
I think the editorial.
Let's do like an overlay map of like LA Times subscriber, Brit subscribers.
I would say,
and
the question you have
single family zoning around.
A bunch of crack investigators on your in your bullpen that you don't even need. This is a really easy answer.
And also narrow it down to the people who write letters in the. Subset
right.
of people that subscribe
right.
to the LA Times. They receive nearly three dozen letters. Not that many.
It doesn't sound like that many at
yeah,
all.
Nearly three dozen about SB 50, and all but one was negative. And I just want to read some of these, some of the comments about them. Leslie O'Toole Roque of Los Angeles says, SB 50 would wipe out family life in Southern California as we know it, and Hollywood history too. I live in Spalding Square, one of LA's historical preservation overlay zones. I was Googling around about Spalding Square, and I found an article with the headline, 1950s LA is alive in Hollywood Spalding Square. Does that sound familiar, Alyssa?
I mean, it is a quite adorable little
You wrote
swatch.
That.
For I LA wrote that? Night.
Yes, you wrote it.
I did?
And not that, like in 2014.
Oh, it's a photo I didn't write the headline, so I'm not quite sure. But yes, I took a photo. I used to write a column for LA Magazine where I would take photos of places when I was walking around. So
you've written maybe too much.
I should stop, according to some people on the internet, probably the writers of these letters.
And so she says, an attractive location for silent actors and directors at the Hollywood film industry's outset. We were also home to Lucille Ball, and Walt Disney dined here weekly for years.
There's your theory. There's your theory.
The best.
Any
I have
building
said
he,
this.
You said any building he looks at, right?
He's ever looked at needs to just have like a glass put over it and a big plaque on the lawn.
Neighborhood would not be subjected
weekly.
To this, I don't think.
No, so where did he dine in Spalding Square?
I don't know.
Someone's like... like a potluck dinner or something? There's no restaurant.
You'd have to kind of like expand the neighborhood boundaries to like the Sunset
I wonder
Strip.
If he regaled Spalding Square residents with any of his theories about the Jews or, you know, as long as we're talking about history.
I think that's what the plaque says, actually.
Stars still call us home, but mostly we're ordinary people of every color, income bracket, sexuality, and age. We also have a homeless shelter opening soon, very close to our eastern boundary. I'm guessing that's the Schrader Bridge housing. I do not think that is very close.
I thought the same thing because it would have been.
I don't know what else it would be.
It's kind of far from, unless it's a West Hollywood shelter.
It could be. Could it be the LGBT center?
Oh, that could count. Maybe. Yeah.
Not that close.
It's not that close. No.
Okay. And also this one is the wildest shit. One of the craziest things I've ever read in the LA Times. Glenn Zweifel of Mar Vista says, I have always maintained that there is not necessarily a shortage of housing, but an excess of people.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
That one is so gross.
On the verge of irresponsible to publish in a newspaper.
It is, you know, like you can think about any of the times that this argument has been trotted out in history, basically, and just be like, okay, what comes directly from that?
Why?
Manifest destiny, ethnic cleansing, Lebensraum. There are like no shortage of examples of there are too many people leading directly to the worst state policies that you can think of.
Why create more housing when you could just get rid of,
forcibly evacuate large swaths of LA?
I mean, I saw some people saying that, like, some friends online saying things like, everyone agrees that we do need more housing in this city. It's just a question of how to do it. That's just not true. And I would say maybe the majority of people weighing in on this topic do not believe that the population should increase at all. There's a feeling of, if you can't afford to live here in the city of 4 million people, second biggest city in the United States, then go live somewhere else. And that includes the children who are born here and have no place to live when they grow up. I have one other funny fact that I have been I've been reading Randy Shaw's book. Have you read Generation Priced Out? It's so good.
It's really good.
There's a lot of good stuff in it. And he talks about L.A., and I actually have to go get the book so I can read this section. One second.
That's the hold music.
Okay, so Randy Shaw is the director of the Tenderloin Housing Clinic. Mm-hmm. Have you had any dealings with him? He's a cool guy.
We interviewed him for Curbed. I did not personally, but
he's been a renter advocate, and he wrote this book, Generation Priced Out, which takes a look at basically every major city in the U.S. and talks about their housing crisis and the different housing issues that they have to deal with. And he talks about Venice and this project that they're building, that Venice Community Housing is building on the Metro lot, one that we've talked about before, that they raised $200,000 to keep out the homeless housing in Venice. And he talks about one of the people protesting this project. It's a guy named John Moore, who the LA Times describes as a shaggy-haired, full-bearded surfer, a Venice resident, and launcher of ethically-minded brands and fashion lines. He's been speaking out against this project, and he made his money coming up with the name for Hollister.
What?
The Abercrombie sub brand.
Right, yeah.
That, to me, is the most... This is the most LA story.
Yeah. Imaginable.
The guy who came up with Hollister... The picture in the LA Times article is him sitting in one of those backyard, like, big poofy pillow lounges fighting against homeless housing in his neighborhood. The greatest. Unbeatable. Anyway, what any other LA stories?
I'm going to defer mine for this week since we have so a lot much to talk about.
Yep, sorry, I was selfish.
That's totally fine.
This concludes Hayes' readings of...
This is important. I'm happy.
Buy the book. It's a great book. Let's talk about these Metro cuts. We tipped that it was going to happen. Everyone knew that they were planning cuts. Let's get into the details. Scott, you were talking about this a lot online this week. It seemed like they were even worse than you expected.
So basically, everything that we said was going to happen, which was a reduction in service hours. That's the metric of how often buses and individual rail vehicles are out in service, able to be... boarded by passengers. That was being cut pretty much across the board. Rail got cuts from 6 and 7 minute headways during rush hour to 8 minute headways in the upcoming fiscal year, which starts in July. Buses get an overall major reduction in service hours, which we should also note is actually even worse than it appears, because as traffic has gotten worse, the amount of distance that a single bus can travel over the course of a service day has declined. So
that blows.
Yeah. So really, we're talking about significant cuts to Metro service. And Measure M has, along with Measure R, all of these taxes that we've voted for over the course of the past several decades are intended to fund operations. Basically, what we're seeing is Metro using the tax money as they said they would to fund construction of new rail projects, and basically just banking the money for operations, refusing to spend it on improving service and holding on to it for whenever these new projects open. But it's certainly a frustrating vote. What you're referring to, Hayes, that was worse than what I imagined, was I thought that there would be probably, considering the extent to which the Metro Board views public transit service as a fountain of political goodwill, that they would, for instance, look at the light rail lines, some of which recently opened, some of which have been closed for quite a while, the Blue Line, that they would actually want to not make the high profile cuts to peak hour service, which will inevitably result in a lot of pictures on social media of, oh, why is my train so crowded? It turns out that they didn't actually care enough to even ax those. They just went ahead and approved the entire budget as proposed. So that is an extraordinarily disappointing outcome. And I think it should really give people a lot of hesitation the next time that any Metro affiliated official says that they are in support of public transit, says that they are in support of making major changes, a la the LA Green New Deal. It definitely casts a poor light on this. This was passed unanimously by the board.
I have a question that I was talking about with some people yesterday. Could we, not that we need more ballot measures,
form our own board.
Can we start our own Metro board? Could we require, if you are a board member of Metro, to that you have to ride transit a certain number of days or hours or trips per week?
Yeah, I think what you guys both said is actually part of the same. It's part of the same question. Can we change the way the Metro board is structured? And the answer is yes. That would require actually a state ballot measure, because Metro, even though it is operating in LA County, is actually a state charter agency. So somebody we've talked about previously on this show, Tony Mendoza, noted creep who quit the Senate in disgrace, actually tried numerous times to do just that. He wanted to change the Metro board, arguably for the worse, basically to make it more fragmented and give more representation to outlying smaller cities. But the point that he was generally making was that the structure of the board as it currently exists is not ideal. And that is something that I generally would agree with. There is, you get appointed to the board. You don't actually have to have any knowledge or interest in public transportation, as we've seen with recent addition to the Metro board, Janice Hahn, making a very high profile decision to overrule staff recommendations regarding the operating patterns of the upcoming Crenshaw line. These people don't know what they're doing, and there's no incumbency on them to actually defer to people who do know what they're doing.
Yeah, we should make clear for people who don't know, most of the Metro board, people think it's probably just like government flunkies and appointees. Some of them are appointees, but it's the vast majority of them are extremely powerful politicians in the city in their own right. Eric Garcetti is on the Metro board. Mm-hmm. Mike Bonin, one of the more progressive members of the city council, is on the board. Robert Garcia, mayor of Long Beach, who champions his like pro-bike stance and his climate consciousness, is on the Metro board. Janice Hahn, as you mentioned, a couple other council members, Mark Ridley Thomas, and the mayor of Duarte, Hilda Solis, the supervisor, Sheila mm-hmm. Kuehl. There's a lot of, it's mostly powerful politicians
yep.
who in this case are committing an attack on the lowest income, most vulnerable people in the city by cutting bus service. The average, what's the income, average income of the average Metro bus rider?
It's like 15,000-16,000 household income annually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is an incredibly indigent population. Immediately on the heels of this decision, Robert Garcia, mayor of Long Beach, as you noted, mentioned on Twitter that the Blue Line shutdown, which has been going yes. on and involves the
which will also include the Expo Line shortly,
supplementation of bus service parallel to the Blue Line, himself and Janice Hahn have decided to propose keeping the point-to-point, end-to-end Long Beach to LA bus service indefinitely following the reopening of the Blue Line, because in Garcia's words, some of the people who ride the service like it so much better than the Blue Line, which is remarkable because you end up at this place where we are not that, I mean, what the Blue Line has existed for 30 years at this point about. These are the reasons why we got rid of the Pacific Electric in the first place. Replace it with buses. That was the notion in the 50s. Replace it with buses. And people can avoid, you know, areas of the city, which will remain nameless, that they don't want to go through, populations of people that they don't want to have to interact with. The service will be faster, blah, blah, blah. It's the exact same things that were said at the time that we got rid of our original rail network. Now we're saying that we're going to do this basically immediately after we reopen the blue line that we're supposedly spending all this money making so much better.
Yeah. Continue direct shuttle service and then I guess gradually reduce service on the shuttle.
Like, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you're siphoning riders off of the blue line, mm-hmm. which then allows you to make service cuts to the blue line. Also, we should say that if you are providing these hours for a blue line express parallel service, that those are taking up some of the hours of bus service that were just cut. So everybody gets screwed, except for presumably white collar commuters from Long Beach to LA and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that is who your Metro board is supporting right
Trash.
Now.
Garbage. Elon Musk in the news this week. The Boring Company.
Speaking of transporting people.
Alyssa takes a deep breath.
Speaking of point-to-point transportation for this a week, small group of people.
With the news, the Elon Musk news, I was picturing in like Mortal Kombat where the guy is just kind of like reeling back and forth. And I was thinking in reference to Alyssa, finish him. What happened?
What didn't happen is the better question to ask. Well, okay. We have to start the conversation of what happened over the last week with a framing device, which it was a report that came out towards the end of the week about by the New York Times of the top CEO compensation for 2018. And they had to reconfigure the way that they usually chart this because this person was off the charts. They had to redesign the chart to accommodate the $2.3 billion in compensation that Elon Musk received. So just put that figure in your head as we begin this conversation.
$2.3 billion.
So Vegas. We haven't even really talked about this project much because
I was completely unaware of it.
I did not know it existed
until I heard it
passed. I was kind of tracking it and then you still don't quite know with these, you know. So there was a vote in March where they're looking for a transportation system for their convention center, which if you've ever been, have you been to a convention in the convention center
not
in Vegas?
Vegas.
The CES? You're so lucky. So if you, it is really big. Like it's a big convention center. So they're adding another exhibit hall. So it's going to be even bigger. And if you look at the distance you'd have to walk from one end to another, it would be about a 20-minute walk to get from, say, you had to, you know, had an appointment at the far, you know, southeast corner to the far north. Okay, so Vegas is a famous place for, you know, experimental transportation systems.
Probably what it's most famous for.
Yeah, these moving sidewalks that you see when you, and they go uphill and downhill in casinos, like as you're trying to get, you know, the gaming floor between gaming floors. So it's not that strange that they would want to have something that might be ride-like or interesting for beyond the reasons of transporting people 1 mile. I guess they had heard all these proposals in March. They chose the Boring Company because they said it was the cheapest proposal. That's what they said at the time. And so they had a contract commissioned and then they voted this week on the contract. So that if you look in this contract, it was interesting because it's for $48 million, but there's two kind of like big things that stick out from that are not in the contract. One is any real details about how the vehicles will move through a tunnel, a 0.83 mile tunnel that goes beneath the convention center with three stations. So you've got three.
What's the length on that?
0.83 miles. So you've got three stations.
That's
so you're
too
going
long for a building. I just want to say
you're going 0.4 miles per time. You start your station and get to the midpoint, hop off, and do your conventioning or whatever. And the cost is $48 million. So that's two tunnels, so twin tunnels. And it doesn't really say much more than that. It just says that they'll have to add the safety features that are not on their test tunnel, which is in Hawthorne, which is a little over a mile, 1.14 miles long. So they'll have to add things like ventilation and stations, you know, all these things that they didn't have. But what's not explained in the contract and what was kind of interesting to, you know, see the people from the convention authority explain is that they don't even actually really know what is going to happen. And they approved this and voted on it. And they're giving this money, which is mostly hotel taxes that are, it's not like public funds. It's for the convention, like authority. You know,
right.
People are mad because in Vegas, the city has not implemented this light rail system that supposedly the voters want. And people have been trying to get heavy for a long time, but I don't think it's the same like pool of money. So it's not like they're giving it to this instead of that. But it rests upon this idea of somehow these vehicles are getting through getting 4,000 people per hour through this system. Uh-huh. And as far as we can tell, it's just like a car.
I mean, even more than as far as we can tell, they've kind of made that explicit at this point. People were asking, so this is the like, let's take go back through the history of the Boring Company. When Scott and I, in our second episode, got some questions answered about about the plans for the Boring Company. At the time, it was you were going to pull up on the surface to basically a moving elevator.
Yes. That's not in there.
And you'd get on and the elevator goes down and then you would ride on a sled through this tunnel. Right. That was possible because the car wouldn't be moving, so there would be no emissions, and so they wouldn't have to use ventilation. It would make everything a lot cheaper. The sled would take you directly to your destination and take you up on the platform, and you would just drive off. Then Alyssa went to the event, the big unveiling of the Boring Company test tunnel.
And there was a car elevator, and then there were these like guide wheels that would snap on and off of your car to keep them a certain distance away from the edge of the tunnel.
Yeah, so you had to have a special attachment to your wheels, and it would keep you on the track in the tunnel.
And you got to do that, and it was a bumpy
ride. but so this week, after the Vegas announcement, the Boring Company put out a video that showed, supposedly, there were no journalists in this vehicle, but a vehicle getting up to 127 miles per hour in this 1 mile test tunnel that they have. The speed that we got to in the car I was in was like 44 miles. Some people got a little bit faster than that.
Won a race was the caption.
Won a race,
and it showed,
oh yeah, and then the other car.
It raced another car that had to go through normal traffic versus a car that went down the elevator and then down the track. I'd be curious what would happen if you had to wait for
the elevator
car to go down the elevator.
The other video was waiting in line to get in the elevator. Right. So the car elevator works and you can probably drive a Tesla very fast through the tunnel. It looked like they had fixed the bumps and it wasn't, unless there was just a motion.
Because there was
like,
no track. There wasn't the elevated track.
Yeah, they might have just paved the bottom, right? So, and then in the comments, as Elon Musk likes to get into the mix, you know, people are responding. They're like, what happened? People were like, what happened to the sleds? What happened to, you know, all these things? And he's just like, we're doing this because it's simpler and cheaper.
You say he likes to get into the mix, but I would say it's more accurate to say he is a relentless shit poster. He cannot help himself. Like, this is what he enjoys doing, is getting in the comment sections and telling a bunch of people who idolize him what a genius he is. The things that we've seen here are the aspects that were never in doubt. We know that the mechanics of the car elevator are, you know, that they are what they are. It's technology that has existed for a long time. Paved roads have existed for even longer. None of that was in doubt. The question was always, could this be a system that was a suitable substitute for high capacity public transportation? The answer is, I think, clearly no. Elon Musk has been very dishonest throughout this entire process. He has legitimate business interests elsewhere. But as far as the Boring Company goes, this has been an exceptionally bald-faced con that has been bought into by a ton of public officials for no real reason other than that they think that he's a smart guy and they would like to do something that is splashy. Somebody's telling them that they can do something a lot easier than doing the hard thing that everybody knows works. But now we like the central premise of this project is clearly what Elon Musk has not changed saying from day one, which is that he believes that induced demand doesn't exist. And that if you just tunnel underground, you can make everybody's point-to-point driving experience seamless because you can just build as many tunnels as you want.
Yes, it's all about that again this week.
That is what this is all about. It's not about replacing any sort of existing public transportation by more sustainable means. All of the innovative parts of this we're just dressing. It's like it's completely just about building freeways for Teslas.
And you talk about the different public officials that have fallen for it. It is fewer and fewer of them. The Chicago project looks like it's dead.
Yeah, that's basically another thing that changed this week, too. They have a new mayor, a woman, Lori Lightfoot. And she basically she's one of the people who was like, it looks like a tunnel for Teslas to me. And and has basically said she has no support for the project. So that looks like that one's dead.
The one along the eastern seaboard doesn't look like it's proceeding very fast. Haven't heard a lot about the Dodger Stadium.
You haven't
tunnel.
Heard more since their meeting here.
But I mean, that's kind of the disadvantage of being a showman and doing all of this in public. You compare the Boring Company to a contractor like Tudor Perini that just got hired to finish the Purple Line extension. Also, like basically con artists. They're like really good at making like nice looking bids and then quadrupling them when it comes time to actually pay the bill. But by doing this all out in the open, the way Elon Musk has, every aspect of it has changed in the year plus that they've been working on it to become basically what people accused it of being in the first place, which is just an underground road network that they use basically sewer tunneling machines.
TBM. Yeah. And I guess this is part of what being the highest paid CEO in America can get you. But the cost of this transportation system in the contract does not include the vehicles or anything. They have to invent and test and build.
That, I think, is going to be the cheapest part of this, because they... Like the submersible for the Thai kids, they just use like Tesla parts that they have.
Well, my point was going to be, I think they're going, they say in these renderings, what they said and they had in these renderings were these 16 passenger vans using like a Model X as the base, you know. But I think what we're going to see happen is they're going to just be like, oh yeah, this is so much easier just to throw actual Model X's into this tunnel.
That's how it goes. Like, that is the most...
This is simpler, guys. Yes. It's simpler.
Why build this whole new thing? We have these ones lying around. Right. Just buy these that we already have been
making.
And
then the Convention Authority president was like, I guess someone must have asked him about the capacity issue, because I'm not an expert on cars, but 4,000 people per hour getting in and out of... Tesla Model, like, this is what they were saying, like getting in and out of an SUV. I mean, you know how long it takes to get you in and out of a car. I guess they could modify it with like put the gullwing doors on the, you know, and everybody gets in fast, whatever. But like, you could do like double gullwing doors or something. I don't know. But he said that they were going to be platooning in sets of 10 to reach these high speeds. But think of a 16 passenger. Think of the last 16 passenger van that you rode in. It takes a while to get it going. And then you're going to have to stop to pick up passengers at this station that's 0.4 miles away, right?
And so there's no elevator in this version,
there's
right?
no car elevator. The cars stay below the entire time. Yeah. The people are the ones who come down into the tunnel.
Okay.
Which, props for that. I mean, at least that's
but that
one
was
part
like,
that's
But
right.
that was such a core element
yeah,
of the original
Yeah, that was what we were getting sold. Yeah.
Project.
So keep an eye on this one. It'll be done by CES 2021, which will be in January. So I'm sure it'll be done.
Let's talk physical conflict, people. Enough of this
simmering tension. Yeah,
enough of these tweet fights. Let's get the real fights.
All this like transit and like housing stuff. Let's talk about people beating the shit out of each other.
Alyssa says, put the Twitter fingers away. Let's have it out.
The city of Commerce. Home of Commerce Casino, home of the Citadel Outlet Mall, home of not that many people.
No, 12,000
population. 12,000 people. Their city council members took a retreat to Indian Wells, their last one, because they are now banned from the facility. And while they were there, there was a scuffle that put one of them in the hospital. And has there the fallout has been coming out over the last few days. Scott Frazier has more.
Live from the scene.
Live from Indian Wells.
So basically what we're talking about here, California Contract Cities Association, which Alyssa and I talked about last week.
Funny. We like right when this was happening, basically.
We were talking about their displeasure with the Sheriff Alex Villanueva. They host an annual confab, basically. This was the 60th annual municipal seminar that they have out. Well, this year it was in Riverside County at a golf resort. They have a big golf tournament where city council members go. They call it Golf Around the World. Then apparently, I guess, just under the hot sun all day, just things are heating up.
Yeah.
They started swinging.
The second day of the event after.
Not the kind that they probably also do.
Second, yeah, Price is Wrong. The second day of the event, after the scheduled talks for the day had concluded, there were reports of a scuffle involving at least seven individuals, four of whom were from the City of Commerce's five-member city council. We have reports that are conflicting from two members of the city's pro-cannabis wing and another report from the anti-cannabis wing that they're substantially at odds. So we have John Soria, who is currently also the mayor of Commerce, and Ivan Altamirano, who were apparently getting into a fight with Leonard Mendoza, who was one of the anti-cannabis permitting council members, and Hugo Argumedo. And it's unclear who started what, but Leonard Mendoza was knocked unconscious. There were photos of him circulating with blood spattered all over while he was laying unconscious on the ground at the Indian Wells Resort. And he was eventually, as you said, Hayes, hospitalized. Now, Argumedo and Soria have issued competing claims about what happened, who initiated the conflict. Argumedo said that he was pinned up against a vending machine and punched multiple times. He showed a local news station pictures of his eye, which appears to have been cut. Soria, the mayor again, he issued his own statement from Las Vegas, where he apparently retreated to immediately after this conflict.
As one does.
He's hanging out in Prim.
Saying that he went to help out Altamirano. Mendoza was already unconscious, and then him and Altamirano were attacked from behind. He says he knows who attacked him and will be reporting it to the Riverside Sheriff's Department. Notably, nobody wanted to give names of the people involved when this happened. The Riverside Sheriff's Department said that they were not reporting because they didn't think it was breaking news in what is like the most remarkable, yeah. Somehow.
Yeah.
The
skull most, breaking news.
Yeah, it was literally breaking news.
The most remarkable law enforcement quote of the year, I feel like.
It is not breaking news in a way. Which is like, okay, like gateway cities, like city council members are like trying to murder each other. I mean, it's like kind of not, but like kind of par for the course.
What a weird quote.
Yeah, if you could have said something else than not exactly that.
What do you guys think? This is truly just like a bizarre story that is apparently related, according to Hugo Argumedo, related to the tense discussions that have been going on in the City of Commerce about whether or not they should legalize recreational marijuana sales in the City of Commerce. They did do that at a May 7th meeting, but Argumedo and Mendoza were the two dissenting votes. Mendoza was very heated during the City Council session, basically implying that he thought that the pro-cannabis wing was going to get them into legal jeopardy, and also that they thought that he was too uneducated to understand the nuances, man, of the art ordinance that was being put forward. So 10 days later, he's unconscious on a pool deck. It is quite a story. I would say it's breaking news.
Commerce is the greatest. I've talked a lot about William Fulton's book, The Reluctant Metropolis. He has a whole chapter about the gateway cities that's great, where he talks about the suburbs of extraction,
right,
which is an awesome term, which is all these little municipalities that built up around Los Angeles, because Los Angeles has all these crazy rules about you not being allowed to build houses next to like battery smelting factories. And the gateway cities are like, this is, you know, the like draconian, what do we live in, like communist Russia? You, yep, should be able to do, if you're a business, come here.
Yeah.
We are naming our city after you, so you can come feel welcome, uh-huh, to do whatever you want, poison our population. There's not that many of them anyway. So, and he talks of these like great stories about how they were all white run for a really long time. There was a huge influx of Latino population in the 80s and 90s, and they gradually took political power and started doing exactly the same things that, mm-hmm, the white leadership had been doing. Which was basically, so Commerce is the most amazing of all the gateway cities, I think, because they sit on a $60 million annual budget for a population of 12,000 people.
Yep.
So that's twice the per capita budget of Los Angeles.
Yep.
They get something like $25 million a year
from Commerce Casino just from the name licensing.
What?
They're licensing the name of the city.
Wow.
And so that's a giant payday for them. The Citadel Outlet Mall, which was actually like that when it was a tire factory. That was the, it was the Samson tire factory that was built in that like weird Assyrian style when it was a tire factory. Isn't that insanely bizarre? So they have tons of money. And the reason why they're constant, I mean, they get in trouble all the time for Ivan Altamirano. I know, got in trouble for voting to put his sister on various boards and voting to put a stop sign next to his house. Adam L. Mark at the LA Times writes about this stuff extremely well all the time. But he, like all of these officials, there's so much money at stake. Mm-hmm. When you're in charge of this money being distributed at Commerce, there's very few people involved in the political process. It's very, what you need, like, what, 1,000 votes to be put in one of these positions?
Yep.
I'm shocked that they haven't gotten on board with basically the rest of LA and California have been imitating them with weed stuff.
Right.
Like, they want to extract as much weed money as they can. Yeah. And so the fact that Commerce is behind on this is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is. And during the course of this city council meeting that I was listening to on May 7th by a really, I love this twist of fate. You can watch the May 7th meeting. The weed discussion is happening about 4 hours and 20 minutes in. And they are discussing who is basically which of these wings has the mantle of pro-business. That's just the kind of city that we are talking about here in Commerce. Which one is the more pro-business side? And the discussion is all centered around the fact that Commerce had the med club sales. Now they're saying they are not going to be getting revenue from that going forward because recreational sales are presumably overtaking that.
Uh-huh.
They're saying that they are out of step with California law and need to have some sort of ordinance on the books for how they are going to handle it, which they don't have. Now, it really is interesting because you have Mendoza saying basically that he is representing the people who voted him into office, whereas the other people are just ignoring that in order to secure more tax revenue. But yeah, so that would be, I guess, the breaking point in a city like Commerce.
It's honestly a great metaphor for Tesla. You are the first one through the wall doing electric cars, just like Commerce was for deregulation, so you could get the huge city budget. And everyone else starts doing what Tesla is doing. Other companies start doing electric cars, just like California starts imitating Commerce's model by trying to extract weed money. And the Tesla and Commerce are left struggling and beating each other up. Do you know about Camp Commerce?
No. Oh,
what's that?
You live in Commerce. You have access to these bungalows on Lake Arrowhead.
Oh, I have heard about that.
For 3 weeks a year or something, because the air in Commerce, of course, is not super breathable because they're just like burning tires there at these different facilities all the time. So you can go get rejuvenated at Lake Arrowhead. They also have the giant rec center that they built there with their big city budget. But the city, it is a poor city. The population there is still poor. It's a very working class city. Wild. What else are we talking about today?
Gavin Newsom announced a homelessness task force.
Oh yeah, that's right. So there was a big announcement.
Everybody was waiting with bated breath. Yeah, it was so hyped, and then
tired of task.
He said that he was going to make an announcement on homelessness.
Yes.
Are you tired of task forces? I'm tired of task forces.
I feel like that could have been something we did, a while ago.
Like a friend of the show, Julia Wick, said about Garcetti's decision not to run for president, I do feel like this could have just been an email blast. It did not need all of the fanfare that attended
it. Well, they had to show off the new logo. They made a new logo.
They did a new logo. Yeah. I didn't see that. You're into design. What do you have any design critiques?
Just don't spend money on logos at this point.
It's a super team. Daryl Steinberg, mayor of Sacramento. Mark Ridley Thomas, a member of the Board of Supervisors. Some other people who have way too much other stuff to be doing to be on a homelessness task force.
Yeah.
And they talk about appointing czars locally. So this is an issue with a problem as big as homelessness and housing and all this stuff. Mitch O'Farrell, I think, is the new head of the homelessness committee at City Hall. This is a full-time job.
Like, you cannot tackle a problem this big.
Yeah. I mean, is anybody, and I would love to hear from our listeners on this, does anybody think that the problem with homelessness in Los Angeles is that Mark Ridley Thomas doesn't have enough power locally? Like, he's not empowered enough, and that's why we have 50,000+ people on the streets every night? Like, it just doesn't seem to wash for me.
And he has been a motivator on this stuff.
Sure.
He's doing his job in the sense that he really gets people volunteering for the count.
We've got the Empowerment Congress too, which
Measure H would not have passed without his like stumping for it really, really hard. It only barely got over the line as it was. So he is a good leader on these issues, but in terms of actually coming up with solutions and like running a department to manage this kind of thing, he's got too many other jobs as it is. And task forces never do anything anyway. So if you're going to make an announcement, have it be like a huge funding influx for housing.
Did they put out any goals, or like, is there something that is actually going to be tied to this?
I think it was announcing the task force. I mean, this is the problem, I think, with we're starting to see with our new governor. Some key appointments in, say, like the transportation world are just being made by him at the state level. We have groups like, this is not housing related, but like the CTC, the California Transportation Commission, which is like worse than the Metro Board when it comes to allocating funding in ways that align with climate goals and housing goals. Because the transportation, you know, funding, it matters how you house people and where you house them. And nobody there seems to understand the crisis, the dual crisis that we are facing. Jerrell Steinberg is amazing. Like, he is a great, he was the person who passed SB 375 when he was in the California State Legislature, which is supposed to help us achieve these goals about putting housing closer to transportation. And now he's the mayor of Sacramento. He has done a great job. But are, like you said, are we really just like moving people around in a room and sitting them in chairs and be like, well, what do you think? There are serious reforms that need to be made at the state level. And he didn't speak up on SB 50 in a way that would have made a difference. He's not really going to bat
I do feel like, though, this is part of a pattern. Like, I think you're right. Like, this is, and not just for Newsom, but like, so the Sacramento Bee is saying that the main output of what we expect from this task force first is a report on what the state should do about homelessness. And Newsom is saying, you know, the first thing is we have to have a plan. The state has no plan. It just seems ridiculous. We have so many urgent crises as a state. Like, this is the kind of thing where the state economy is, in some by some metrics, doing better than it has ever done. But the success has been, you know, in a way catastrophic for a lot of the people who live here. And yet we keep hearing that we have these urgent crises, we have urgent problems that need to be addressed, and what we need to do is stop what we're doing, which is nothing, and like take a couple years to issue a report on something.
Yeah, just studying it. And then these two bills are languishing in the legislature right now. We have 1-4-8. I'm not going to say it.
We have AB 1481 and AB 1482.
It's so easy for you to say, and I can't say it. I want to say 1492. We've talked about this before. So we've got
ocean blue.
Yeah, we're going to say it the right way. but he could be saying to stop more people from becoming homeless, let's pass these bills that would help renters and tenants to stay where they are. I mean, that's a really simple, easy, don't need a task force.
Yeah, that is a good transition. We have a lot of bills that are that have been put forward in the legislature, both in the Assembly and in the Senate, that have been intended to make a dent in the housing crisis. And the lack of will, like, so what we were seeing at first, this legislative session, was a movement to both increase housing supply and also to protect the existing renter population. That has really stalled out. The mm-hmm. momentum for that has completely given out. We've talked at length about SB 50 both today and in the past, but like you were mentioning, there are other bills as well that are intended to increase tenant power here. So we have AB 1481, which is the just cause tenancy termination.
Which means that you cannot evict a tenant for
no reason.
For no reason.
Right. Yeah. So this is something that Rob Bonta from the East Bay has put forward in the past. It didn't make it through during the last session. And now, again, it's struggling to get through the legislature this year. It still needs to come up for a vote in the assembly by May 31st. So today is the 27th. So it's got till the end of this week. It has been amended and diluted. So this bill is basically now no longer, strictly speaking, about just cause eviction. Rather, as tenant advocate Shanti Singh said on Twitter, it has now become a paid relocation bill.
Yep.
So what was originally a hard and fast prohibition on no cause eviction has now become, if a tenant is being evicted without cause, they have to be paid a certain amount in order to relocate. So that doesn't fundamentally end the practice the way that tenants' rights advocates were hoping that it would. It also they also added in an amendment that would sunset the bill in 2030. Sunsets are typically not that big of an issue. If you think about like Measure R, the tax here, we did get that extended indefinitely well before the sunset actually would have come up. But the fundamental change, making it so that landlords basically now just have to pay a relocation fee and they can continue with forcibly removing tenants and rebuilding higher income housing. It
codifies that process.
It does.
In a way that seems dangerous.
It does. And again, the enforcement in term that this is actually something that we can talk about from a perspective locally in Los Angeles, because we actually have better protections against no cause eviction than most places in the state do. Los Angeles's rental stabilization ordinance, which covers 75% of the rental units in the city, actually precludes landlords from no cause evictions. You have to have a just cause eviction if you are a tenant in an RSO unit. However, that is something that is incredibly difficult to enforce. And you can look back over the past several years and see the LA Times has written on numerous occasions about landlords who do evict for no reason, and it is extremely difficult for the city to keep pace with that.
There's a real like, what are you going to do attitude with some of these evictions, where like it costs money to hire a representative to defend you in cases like this. So in a lot of cases, people just get steamrolled by it.
Absolutely. Landlords will tell their tenants, you know, like, you have to get out, and they'll offer them some amount of money that's not even necessarily the amount that they are required to get if they are to relocate under the RSO. Most tenants don't know about that.
Yep. So what about, that was 1481?
Yeah.
What about 1482? That was a rent cap put forward by David Chu that caps rent increases at 5%, but that one has been watered down as well. I believe now it doesn't apply to any unit built in the last 10 years.
That's correct.
And what else changed about it? There's also, don't forget the sunset clause. Got to be a sunset clause. Also for 2030, I believe.
When we'll have solved homelessness. Yes. So it's fine. The cap, I mean, the sunset is fine.
The big carve out here is the 10-year, the 10-year new housing exemption. So this was a bill that was put forward. It was based on a similar piece of legislation that passed statewide in Oregon. This is the so-called rent gouging, preventing landlords from really hiking up their rent above what could reasonably be expected for a tenant who has been living in on a continual basis in a single unit to be able to afford year over year. Mm-hmm. Most people are not getting salary bumps in excess of 5% every year. So the carve out here that this doesn't apply to buildings built in the last 10 years dramatically waters down the scope. It makes it, again, with this sunset, it makes it a considerably less ambitious change. That doesn't mean that it is now meaningless. We do have very little new, this is something that we've fundamentally talked about. We have little new housing in the state compared to, at least in the LA region, compared to what was built longer than 10 years ago. But this does allow for landlords of these larger developments that are being built currently to put these burdensome rent hikes on their tenants.
And you can just look to the north of us in Oregon, where they've passed a suite of bills that do all of these things and more, and change zoning to fourplexes. So the idea that you wouldn't be able to implement these changes, especially when there's so much momentum right now to be talking about this, even at the state level, if the task force could just do that and make sure this all gets passed this and even going this this year and even going back to the SB 50 conversation or the fourplex conversation or something, you know, that's what they could do. That could be something that they could actually do. Will they do that? I don't think they will.
Potential opportunity for some momentum coming up maybe this week. The numbers for the homeless count are going to be coming up soon based on everything we've been hearing from the mayor's office and USC and other people involved in this process. The numbers are going to be brutal. You don't see them laying. I mean, they did so much crowing about last year's 3% decrease that you wouldn't see the mayor. I think the mayor himself has been going around saying that these the results do not look good. And we've talked about before that there's some evidence indicating that the way this process goes, they usually get an undercount. So the real numbers could be even worse than what we're about to hear. So that's something we should be hearing about. If not this week, probably next. It's usually like on early.
Yeah, June. I think it has to be. Didn't you say the deadline was May? So it has to be this week. Mm-hmm. It has to be this week. Yeah. Wow.
If it's going to come out of the originating house this year. Yep. The other piece of legislation that we should mention, at least in passing, was AB 36.
Yes.
So 1481, 1482, and AB 36, which is the rolling rent control. This would have done part of what Proposition 10 would have done during the past election cycle, as far as repealing an aspect of Costa-Hawkins, which states that rent control cannot be passed on any building that built after 1995. So the rolling rent control bill, AB 36, would have allowed for rent control to be applied to buildings built at least, I believe, 10 years ago was where it was at, but it was held in suspense at the same time as SB 50 was. So really, this is turning from what was a very ambitious year where we were talking about a major housing. Are we going to see a major housing package come out of Sacramento? To no, we're not.
I'll say this. It's not a third rail anymore. We're touching the rail.
That is true.
Just the fact that these things are getting put forward is a positive sign. Is the speed of change even close to the save us from unmitigated disaster? Absolutely not. But the fact that it's moving at all, I think, is somewhat
good.
Positive.
And we've seen a lot of like general commentary in the press that is taking these proposals seriously in a way that I think that we wouldn't have in years past. Like, I mean, the thing about rent control, the things about changing the rent control was something that during the 90s was very decisively rejected by legislators and voters. It was seen as being bad for tenants and bad for landlords. And rent control has definitely made a resurgence. Home building has made a resurgence. And like you said, in a way that clearly demonstrates that they are no longer things that legislators are afraid to bring up.
Yep.
But there was a report this week by a friend of the show, Matt Levin, and Elizabeth Castillo, that at least a quarter of legislators, California legislators in Sacramento, are landlords. And very few
of them. The rest are homeowners. Yes.
Yeah. So like you look at our stagnation on this front and kind of wonder, like, a lot. There is a decided intertwining of the interests of the landlord lobby, the realtor lobby, and also the landlord or the legislators themselves.
Yeah. So we should also talk about briefly SB 529, which is a bill giving renters the right to organize without punishment. That is still going through the Senate. That's a good one. I mean, all of these are worth calling about, the ones that have yet to fully go through. That is one put forward by Maria Elena Durazo in Northeast LA. Very briefly, the Freehand Hotel. You guys been reading about this stuff?
My God, this story is infuriating.
I went to the restaurant there once. It was pretty good. I do not see myself going again in the near future. They were charged by employees with, I mean, where to begin? Employees being forced to clean up, quote, poop explosions without any protective equipment at all, being sexually harassed, being threatened with ICE being called on them, essentially, if they complained. I think this is relevant in the scope of LA policy, and that these are the businesses that are the primary beneficiaries of this is where like a lot of city money goes. Yeah. If you are building a new hotel in downtown LA, you can expect like millions of dollars in subsidies. Because like the Freehand Hotel is, and I don't know exactly how much money they got, but
well, they adapted an older building, so they didn't build they didn't build a building.
Do you not get a subsidy for converting an older building to become a hotel?
These are all on a case by case basis, and it's all entirely it is right to retain future revenue. So it's not we are directly subsidizing.
It is a sub. That's a
no,
subsidy.
It is a subsidy, but it's not a cash inflow subsidy. It's a keep your cash in the future subsidy.
It has cost the city $1 billion over the last 10 plus years.
Yes.
That is all we have for this week. Please join us again next week on LA Podcast. Bye-bye.